you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Incomparable, number 636, October 2022.
Welcome back to The Incomparable. I'm your host, David J. Lohr. This week, we're diving into one of my favorite genres of TV, and if you listen to Magnum Podcast, you can probably guess. That's right, it's detectives, private eyes, and mysteries. Now for our panel, introduced in the order they'll draft as chosen by Random.org, the official randomizer of The Incomparable Network. First up, a new panelist, the co-founder of Lost Girls Theater and director of our new romantic time travel adventure podcast series, Where or When, welcome to the show, Katie Siegel.
Hi, I get to go first. I'm very excited about that.
I know, right?
Nervous and excited.
Next up is actor, photographer, and occasional radio theater voice, Tom McGrath. Hello, Tom.
I am unprepared to go second, so this is going to go great.
But very, very lucky. You know her as the host of Lions, Towers, and Shields, but today we're talking television with Shelley Brisbane. Hello, Shelley.
Well, I'm prepared to go third, which means I'll probably be sniped once and there will be one near miss, but I'm happy to be here nonetheless.
And a stalwart guest on Lions, Towers, and Shields, among other incomparable shows, it's Nathan Alderman.
Thanks, David. I won't take any more of your time. Just one more thing, though.
We'll see if he lasts that long into the round. And finally, a writer for NPR, also a new guest. Maybe you know him as a voice from the Pop Culture Happy Hour or as co-host of A Degree Absolute, the podcast for all things Patrick McGoohan. Welcome to the show, Chris Klimek.
Hi, thank you. Hello, everybody. I'm the fifth man, some like unmade Paul Verhoeven sequel that never came to pass. Very happy to be here.
It's like what happened to Harry Lime several years after he died in a sewer in Vienna. And of course, as the host, I will be going last, which means I actually had to prepare for the draft because I had to think strategically, because no way my picks are going to get anywhere. For this draft, if you have a theme to your picks, go for it. If they're just characters and shows you love, that's good too. The one rule is everyone gets Thomas Magnum. He's off the board because we already have Magnum Podcast where I get to blather about him every week. Well, I should say Original Recipe Magnum. If you want to pick the reboot, that's okay. But we might question your life choices. After a couple of rounds, we'll get to the crazy round. That's for the oddball, out-of-the-box picks, maybe short-lived series, obscure characters. Anything goes in the crazy round. So let's go ahead and get started with round one. I throw it to you, Katie. Who is your first pick?
So I purposefully assumed that I would not get any first picks. So I was like, I'm just going to go wild cards all out the gate. So be prepared. My first pick is the leader of my team. I've created a very specific team, so we're gonna hope that I get everybody. Is Miss Phryne Fisher of the Miss Fisher murder series, murder mysteries.
Very nice.
She's transported herself all the way from the 1920s in Australia to join us this evening, because she's just too stylish and charismatic to not choose.
Oh, of course. No, that's a great choice. Have you seen the mod version, the spinoff of those?
I have. I don't enjoy it as much. I think there's something about S.E. Davis really, like, takes that character and elevates it in a way that's, like, it could feel a little superficial. And I think the mod version kind of has that problem.
Yeah. I mean, the production design is lovely, but it just doesn't quite, I don't know.
Not quite got the heart. Maybe it'll get there in later seasons. You know, that happens sometimes.
Okay. So that's Miss Fisher right off the bat. Tom, what's your first pick?
That was a fascinating value pick. I've been on the board a little bit later, but fair enough.
I had to get her.
That makes total sense. You gotta stick with your strategy. I'm sticking with sentimentality, which means we're going with Jessica Fletcher.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
R.I.P. Angela Lansbury, slay all day.
Yeah, I sort of thought we would, you know, there would be just a, like an implicit tribute to her or something.
I wasn't going to let it go past three. That'd be rude.
Oh, it wouldn't have gone past three.
I didn't think it would. So it's a little snipey, too.
Yeah, it was tempting to say, you know, considering this week, everybody gets Jessica Fletcher. But no, she's still in play. That's good.
And versatile. She's a flex spot pick for most teams.
Although I have to say, once she moved to New York City in the later seasons, the murder rate in Cabot Cove plummeted. So I don't know what that's about.
I don't consider that canon.
Later seasons are rarely canon.
Yeah. I did see a fascinating thread on Twitter today that theorized that Murder, She Wrote actually is a holodeck novel in the Star Trek universe. Because there are so many Star Trek actors from the various series who appeared on it.
And, I love that. That's amazing.
It's kind of plausible, I have to admit.
You've just revealed my strategy. You didn't really. I didn't.
Oh, no.
Everyone's a holodeck.
Everybody's a holodeck thing.
All right. That's Jessica Fletcher off the board. Shelley, what is your first pick?
Well, I'm going to go back a little further in time than Jessica Fletcher. And I'm going to choose Frank Conrad, the star of Cannon. Frank Cannon, the star of Cannon, played by William Conrad. The IMDb description, for those of you who aren't familiar with the series, is a husky ex-cop and culinary enthusiast solves tough cases as a private investigator. It aired from 1971 to 1976. It was a Quinn Martin production. William Conrad was in a number of other shows that might even qualify for this draft, but for the moment, we're just going to stick with Cannon.
Nice. Yeah, that's... Cannon has one of those really earwormy 70s theme songs.
It does. I heard it yesterday.
Right? And the opening credits, I mean, you know, it's the 70s, but like a lot of shows will have your glamour shots of your star, right? And Cannon... kind of, it's like the photographer was drunk and there are just these really weird still photos, including one of like the back of his ear. And that has bothered me since the 70s.
I love like, that.
What
I love
were they
that
thinking?
So much.
But Cannon. Yeah. When William Conrad, he starred as Nero Wolfe for 1 year in like 1980 or 81. And he said part of the reason he liked doing that was because Nero Wolfe was a recluse, so he didn't have to go running after anybody because his feet were still tired from Cannon. So, all right, Frank Cannon. Awesome. Nathan, what's your first pick?
Well, a long time ago, this pick and I used to be friends. I'm picking Veronica Mars from the eponymous UPN/CW/Hulu series. As played by the magnificent Kristen Bell. And the thing I love about Veronica Mars is that she is the smartest person in most rooms, and yet she is not nearly as smart as she thinks she is. The show goes out of its way over the course of all four seasons to talk about how damaged she is by the things that she has lived through and survived, and how that often clouds and affects her judgment in ways that really often endanger herself and the people around her. I love a good flawed protagonist. Usually if you have a flawed detective, it's like, oh, my alcoholism, it's crippling me, but I'll shrug it off to solve this mystery. And with Veronica Mars, they are very clear and upfront about how this gal is carrying around a bucket load of trauma, and it is messing her up in ways that are lasting and serious and really interesting. and don't keep her from being a hero.
One of the things I love about Veronica Mars is it's one of the few things where you can say, all right, this was inspired by Nancy Drew just a little bit, and yet it works on its own. It is its own thing, and it's so much its own thing that the new Nancy Drew series is basically inspired by Veronica Mars.
Oh, absolutely.
That's nuts.
Absolutely.
That series is great, by the way. That series is bananas.
Yeah.
It is.
Oh, yeah. So, all right. Veronica Mars is off the board. Chris, what is your first pick? And are you stunned that it's still there?
No, I'm not. I want to say I admire Shelley's pick of canon, which I need to get up to speed on immediately, because I love William Conrad, who, you know, he's Gunsmoke to me. I'm an old time radio guy.
Oh, and same. I was saving all my William Conrad ephemera, but yes, that was one of the ones I was going to mention.
Yeah, there was never a Johnny Dollar TV show, right?
It didn't last very long, but there's no Bob Bailey in the Johny Dollar TV show.
Oh boy, well, I wish I
had Bob Bailey.
In my back pocket.
So William Conrad played Gunsmoke, played James Arnett, played the Matt Dillon on radio. And then, of course, when they did TV, they had to hire the 6'6" tall James Arness to play Matt Dillon, who looks much more like a traditional sheriff than a little paunchy, bald, mustachioed William Conrad. But he was a great radio Matt Dillon.
It's a 6'6" voice for sure.
And I mean, how many wonderful opening narrations, you know, The Fugitive.
I was
going to mention that too. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Wow. Right.
He narrated movies as well. And he did a ton of radio. Like he just popped up before he was Matt Dillon. He would just be a guest on various, you know, Escape and Suspense and things like that. And just did great character voices.
Rocky and Bullwinkle.
I know.
Yeah. And he directed several dozens of episodes of Have Gun Will Travel.
Wow.
Before they let him actually act on TV.
What a career. The melancholy in his introductions to Gunsmoke, where he says it's a chancy job and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
There was a documentary that they did when Gunsmoke went off the air, where they interviewed him, and apparently somebody walked up to him one day and said that, started quoting that to him, and he looked at them like they were crazy. And I said, well, you don't recognize that? That's your introduction from Gunsmoke. He said, look, I recorded that once in 1952. I don't remember it.
Oh, right. I guess I imagine them doing it, you know, with every new episode. But of course, that makes sense.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, I'm gonna start with, I don't know if anyone will challenge me for detective eligibility here, but I'm gonna go with Simon Templar, Leslie Charter. Anybody want to correct my pronunciation of Charteris? Okay,
it is Charteris. Thank you. Beats me.
And he was Vincent Price on radio, but he was, of course, Roger Moore on television for, I think, seven years, circa 62-69, time of big changes in British TV production. But this is the suave, debonair, and young Roger Moore that I think Cubby Broccoli and Harry Saltzman were looking for when they finally got him in the Bond role in the next decade. What I like about this character is he seems to be famous. There's at least in the television show, there's no explanation for why everyone knows his name. You know, Johnny Dollar, he is the star of a radio program, and the people he encounters in his investigations will have heard his adventures reported on the radio, but we never know why Simon Templar is such a celebrity, but it does not seem to interfere with his ability to solve crimes. Also a very, quite a nonviolent guy, you know, seems to succeed on pure guile and persuasion. So does anyone object to me counting Simon Templar as a detective?
Oh, not at all.
No, absolutely not.
He was on my long list.
Okay.
Yeah, mine too, actually.
I figured he'd get picked at some point. But yeah, I mean, and I've said this on other episodes before, I am literally 4 feet away from an entire shelf of Saint novels, including a ridiculous number of Roger Moore TV tie-in editions that were my uncle's. So, I mean, I just grew up on Simon Templar. Oh, I love that.
Oh, wow.
So, and I'm the Val Kilmer movie is one that exists.
Oh boy. No, I tried to look at that again a few years ago, and pretty grim.
We watched it again last year for an episode of this, and yeah Yeah,
it's definitely a thing. It definitely exists.
The orbital version of the Saint theme is pretty cool. But then there's a whole movie. Anyway, so excellent. Simon Templar. You know, it was something that always bothered me when I was watching the show as a child. Was, you know, here's Roger Moore, here's the suave thing, but every episode he looks up and suddenly there's a halo. And that was just, I don't know why that bugged me. It's like, wait, no. But no, great show, great theme. I hope someone does a good adaptation of that again. It's been too long.
And I hope I haven't erred by drafting him first, because I have no guile with this. I barely understand how drafts work. So I mean, I think I get that, like, the one you really want, if you pick him first, you're going to lose, right? So I may live to regret this.
Oh, not at all. I mean, these are non-competitive drafts. It's just,
good.
If you get sniped, you get sniped. But if not, hey, you got your pick. All right. So that comes to me. And, you know, I'm kind of surprised that most of my picks are here. So I'm going to go with not an obscure one. I made sure I had obscure ones, but I'm going to go with Remington Steele and specifically Laura Holt, of course.
I was going to say.
And, you know, at when that premiered, I mean, that was right up my alley, right? Old movies, capers, con artists, murder mysteries, I mean, and jazz, you know, Henry Mancini. What a theme song. And, you know, a few years into it, suddenly you had Moonlighting basically doing the same thing, but nowhere near as stylishly and wittily. It's still worth a look. It's still worth a look. And what was good is very good. What is questionable is much more questionable now, but it's not a show that does well in the Me Too era, where you know, Remington Steele at least is witty about it. It's not continuously leering and shouting and, you know, hey, let's do, you know, there's a subtlety to it until you get to the TV movies that ended the series. Those are terrible. And you can tell that Pierce Brosnan was not happy that they called him back and he didn't get to be James Bond, until he did get to be James Bond. But yeah, the good seasons of Remington Steele are just delightful. And you have writers from the British Avengers in the 60s coming over and writing that. No wonder it's stylish and fun.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So that is a good first round. Let us go right back to the top. And Katie, what's your second pick?
Well, in case it isn't obvious, I am not familiar with drafting as much either, because I clearly just was like, I'll throw the weirdest choice out first. Everybody's going to want Franny Fisher. I'm going to take the energy back, because whose energy plays off of, if my leader is a sassy, classy 1920s flapper girl, then obviously her right-hand man has to be John Luther, played by the amazing Idris Elba.
Luther.
That's my only attempt at a horrible Cockney accent. Just because I tell people, like, when I watch Luther, it is the only show in my memory where every episode gets better. Like, until the last episode, I mean, the very last episode kind of didn't call that trend, but for the longest time, every episode of that, like, up the stakes, up the intensity, and up, like, the how complicated and wonderful those mysteries were. So, you know, you need the guy who's going to be unafraid to break some rules and bust down doors. So my pick will forever be John Luther.
That series is really more of a horror show disguised as a cop show. Oh, there are some really disturbing things in that series.
Oh, yes, very much so. And it's funny because I come from like a lot of horror like background in terms of like producing content and everything. Never at Lost Girls. We don't really go for horror there. But my outside of Lost Girls work is a lot of horror stuff. And I will tell you, I think that's kind of why I like it. I'm like, this is going to be really messed up, but I'm going to enjoy it.
And Idris Elba, I could watch in anything.
Yeah, he's so good in that. And it's like not really a surprise that that was his breakout role where, like, you know, at least for UK television. And just because it's so intense and it's just got this really dark underbelly. So I've got Fun and Flirty with Franny, and like for the darker mysteries where people are actually being harmed, we got John Luther to just carry that through.
Yeah, I want Idris Elba to be as great in movies as he is in television shows, like Luther,
that
right?
Is
I
mean, an interesting factor of Idris Elba.
I have not seen Beast yet, the new one. I mean, Beast of No Nation is very good, but at a certain level of stardom, choosing projects is part of the job, right? And we could fault him there. Magnificent actor, obviously, versatile, mm-hmm. talented, you know. Not so bad looking, that man. But yes, I want a movie to use him as well as Luther uses him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
it says a lot that Luther and Stringer Bell are his iconic characters, and they're both TV characters. Okay, so Luther, Tom, what is your second pick?
I feel like we're just avoiding the obvious.
We are. But
just leave him there for you, buddy.
It's fascinating, but you know.
Well, so I'm going to go with Benedict Sherlock Hatch.
Mm-hmm.
Yay! Sherlock isn't a new property by any stretch of the imagination, but I really like what they did with particularly with Martin Freeman as Watson. Mm-hmm. And if we're not picking sidekicks, though.
Well, you know, it's a matched set.
Oh, good. We're picking sets. Okay. Then my crazy round is going to be really interesting. But yeah, I think that visually it's a fantastic piece of work. But in particular, the way that Cumberbatch does his work as Sherlock really sort of adds some meaning and folds to a character that we've seen 70,000 times.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Tom, I don't know if you've seen the original pilot versus the pilot that was aired officially.
I don't think I have.
Oh,
it's fascinating because it's only an hour long.
It's
for one thing.
A completely different show. And so much of that is because like Benedict and Martin Freeman like stepped in and were like, we kind of were thinking maybe our characters should be a little more this way. And it's just leaps and bounds. It's insane. The pilot as it was written is enjoyable.
It's fine. Yeah.
It's fine. You know. But if you ever get a chance to see it, I know it's floating around on the internet somewhere. That original pilot is a trip.
And I think it's on the season one DVD.
Oh.
If I'm not mistaken.
I'm surprised I haven't seen this because Sherlock Holmes is I love the Cumberbatch Freeman iteration as well, but that is just one of those properties that I'll watch every version. there's no version that I'll turn down, you know.
Yeah, I was wondering how many different iterations of Holmes we would get tonight, because there are so many of them. So all right. Cumberbund is off the board. Shelly.
No Cumberbunds, sadly.
If you refer to him the same way twice, you get penalized somehow.
That's true. That's
new
true.
Rule. So I've done a few of these drafts before, and one of the things I've learned is that there's value in a theme, and there's even more value in not telling what your theme is till the end, at least if you're me. So I'm working a theme, and so I will tell you as much as I can within that context. My next pick is Macmillan and Wife. From 1971 to 1977, starring Rock Hudson and Susan St. James. He is a police commissioner in San Francisco, and she is his amateur detective wife, and hijinks ensue.
So Susan Macmillan played wife?
Susan St. James.
St. James, sorry.
Yeah, she was his wife.
She was his actual wife.
That's how her, that's her really wife.
And
I can't
plus
remember
one.
Her character name. Yeah. Maybe it was Susan. I'm not sure.
Appendage. I mean, it was kind of a strange name, but
Or if you want, you could call her Allie because she goes on to play Kate and Allie later, if that makes you feel better. God. You know,
I mean, that's indefensible, but that like as anachronism, that is kind of charming. I'm not saying it's okay. Not saying it's okay.
I know. As I say, it follows a theme. It's not. I'm not necessarily able to defend every aspect, including the titles, apparently, of my picks.
Yeah,
I actually had it. I had it pulled up because I was not sure who the wife was. It's Sally.
Oh, that's right.
Max Square, they could call it.
Yeah.
A personal injury law firm.
Have you been injured by someone's negligence? Yes.
Yeah, it was a fun show. And then near the end, she decided she didn't want to come back. And so then it just became McMillan. And I think they killed her off.
And did they really?
It kind of lost all the fun.
And remember, so McMillan and Wife was part of this, well, I shouldn't even say what else is on it because people might pick them, but there's this trio of NBC detective shows that rotated through the schedule through most of the, and it's interesting because of that, there aren't actually that many episodes. There are 40 episodes of McMillan and Wife, but it was, you know, throughout that, it was spread out through those several years.
Yeah. All right, so McMillan and Wife are off the board.
Yeah.
A matched set. Nathan, we come back to you.
I feel like I should pick Columbo. Someone should pick Columbo. But aside from seeing some of the late period Peter Falk movies, which I have a certain affection for back in the late 80s, I don't feel qualified, having witnessed the depth of Columbo love out there on the internet, to pick him. So I'm not. Instead, I'm going to pick... a series that actually only came out this year. Now, 2022 has been a terrible year for nearly everything, but it has been a great year for television. And so I trust that you understand the high bar I'm talking about here when I say that Loki, this might be the best thing I've seen on television in 2022. It is a 6-episode series on AMC Plus called Dark Winds, based on the novels of Tony Hillerman, and the detective I want to single out is Sheriff Joe Leaphorn, as played by the amazing Zahn McLarnon. Dark Winds is a period piece set in the 1970s on a Navajo Indian reservation. McLarnon is the local sheriff policing the reservation, who gets involved in a mystery involving terrorists, bank robbery, the federal government, and possibly black magic. It is a tense, fascinating, absorbing character study, indigenous and native folks in front of and behind the camera telling the story, so that instead of, wow, look at this strange exotic culture, it's just, oh, hey, these folks are living their lives, come join them. And a hard right turn in the episode 5 out of 6 into full horror movie that is just delightful. But McLarnon is an incredible protagonist, instantly a classic Western hero. He's got the ranginess, the kind of crooked stance, the weathered face, the perceptive, penetrating eyes, and he is a thoughtful, careful detective with a lot of baggage and a lot of hurt that he's carrying around and a determination to do right that makes him an incredible protagonist in a really great show that too few people have seen and more people will really enjoy if they check out. That's Zahn McLarnon as Joe Leaphorn in Dark Winds.
I would like to just take a moment to pitch to AMC that they call Nathan as their professional hype man, because I'm going to watch that, like, right now. Like, I might leave you guys. Bye.
There are performances from supporting players in that show that are absolutely riveting and revelatory. And it's the kind of actors and the kind of lives and things that you would never see in any other show.
Oh, thank you for picking that. As much as I hope Columbo gets off the board at some point.
I mean, can you even pick Columbo and not pick him last? I feel like that's the...
you got just
that
one
depends
more pick.
On the other players, doesn't it? Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a good game here in just explaining why we aren't picking Columbo as we go through. Like, right. Why haven't you picked Columbo this turn?
Yes. The elephant in the trench coat or something.
You know, he's just going to outsmart us all anyway. It's fine. It's fine.
We're going to finish the list, and then one of us is going to turn back to the others and go, and
just one more thing.
I gotta say, I admire your picks, but there's something I think you've missed here.
All right, so Chris, what is your next pick?
I was wary of picking entirely detectives from my childhood or from, you know, predating my childhood. So I wanted to force myself to choose someone from the present century. Someone who is in the espionage business, even if they're not officially for much of the run a field agent, counts as a detective, I think. So I want to give all the love to Peggy Carter, a seminal agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., who appeared in the ABC Agent Carter TV series that predated Disney+. I feel like this happened right before this exponential increase in the Marvel content that, now I feel like it's kind of too much, and it's, you know, even though much of it is still very good, it has dimmed my enthusiasm for the Enterprise. But that, you know, in 2015 we weren't quite there yet, and I really, really love Hayley Atwell's performance as someone who is part of this fledgling S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, post-World War II espionage agency. Not really mourning the death of Steve Rogers, but sort of, you know, conscious of the loss and dealing with all the workplace sexism and, you know, dudes who want her to just answer the phone and get coffee. And like, you know, they get some not predictable mileage out of some of that, some of those story beats, while still laying out a suitably fantastic, you know, espionage plot with enough sci-fi edge to make it feel like a Marvel thing. I really like Hayley Atwell. You know, when she shows up briefly in any of the latter day Marvel things, it's that's a big plus for me. So, yeah, Peggy Carter, seminal agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. I can't even remember if it was called S.H.I.E.L.D. yet in the era of Agent Carter, but she's a detective, right? She's solving crimes, solving mysteries. Sure.
I will make an exception, partly because it is a very noirish show. There are mysteries that need solving, and I love the idea that you picked a show from this century that is still in the 1940s. That is a beautiful thing.
I hope, you know, it'll, I don't think it's on Disney Plus, right? It's not one, it's one of the sort of limbo Marvel properties now. Oh, is it? Oh, great. Okay.
Excellent.
But it's recent. It's been recently added, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I honestly hope they figure out a way to do another season of it.
Yes.
Because it's just so good. All right. So that's Peggy Carter off the board. My gosh. All of my first and second round possibilities are still there. I think I'm gonna, you know, there are so many choices. I could pick Columbo. I'm not gonna pick Columbo because I'm gonna pick a recent show that is among the most delightful mysteries I've seen in years. It plays fair with the audience. It is very, very funny. It is very well constructed, and it's surprising because, as the showrunner and co-creator says, he's not a mystery guy. You know, he figured out how to do this for this show. It's Only Murders in the Building on Hulu, nice. Which, you know, I've been a fan of Steve Martin and Martin Short for pretty much as long as I can remember. And you know, you kind of watch some of their later films and you say, well, you know, good on you. You're still funny.
But are you drafting them as a unit? Are you drafting them?
I don't have to. I could just pick Charles, which would be Steve Martin. That's a good point. Yeah, I will pick Charles Haden Savage, also known as Detective Brazos. That is his big expertise, is that he played a detective on TV. And the beautiful thing about this is a show that uses the two of them to beautiful, beautiful effect, which a lot of their movies in the last 15, 20 years have not. And it is so delightful to see. And it's delightful, the chemistry that they have with Selena Gomez. And then that they've created this entire world about the building, the Arconia. The first season building that that cast of characters, and the second season delving into the history of the building and the history of Charles and his parent parentage. It is a beautiful series and has one of the most wonderful opening credits sequences I've seen in years. I love the animation. I love the score. It is one of the best shows I've seen in forever. So, Charles Hayden Savage from Only Murders in the Building. And you know what? Let's do one more normal round before we get to the crazy round, because Columbo is still out there. There are a couple of others still out there.
We're all afraid.
I can't take Columbo because I didn't grow up with Columbo in my heart. Like, I mean, I'd just be taking him for the name. Now, if you said I could take the grandfather from The Princess Bride and believe that he solved crimes, absolutely.
This is totally a kissing mystery. I'm just saying.
Where do you think he came from, you know, when he was called off a murder scene to come read to Fred Savage?
Oh. Inconceivable.
May we all be so lucky. Okay. Okay. So we're not in the crazy round yet. Says the girl who's clearly not picking the usual suspects. All right. So I also have a theme around mine. I will let you see if you can figure it out. For my third pick, keeping with this theme, because we've got Franny, we've got John. So I figure we need somebody with a little extra muscle because, you know, as Chris mentioned, the MCU is out there. So I have to go with Jessica Jones.
Nice.
Jones. Just because, talk about a character who is broken. And she is the I'm drunk, so I'm broken character type. She does fall into that. But just Kristen Ritter, so good in that part. And then just the journey that she goes on from, like, I'm not going to deal with any of my issues to I have no choice but to deal with them is top notch. It's beautiful writing. Maybe my personal favorite of the Netflix MCU universe.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I just think the work they did with her was the best by far in the series. Yeah. And, you know, just watching her get to be unhinged and get to be not okay was so delightful.
All right, Jessica Jones, the second Jessica. Tom, do you have another Jessica for us?
No.
I don't know if there is another Jessica.
I can't think of one. There's a... So I could pick Columbo, but... I'm jealous of Jake Johnson maybe playing a reboot of Columbo instead of me. So that's out. So instead, I'm going to go with another damaged detective in a different sort of psychological way. I'm going to pick Adrian Monk.
Ah, very nice.
Just to make everybody in my detective team not be able to get along at all. Jessica Fletcher will try to, like, keep everybody together. Sherlock's not going to get along with Monk. Monk's not going to get along with Sherlock. It's going to be a blast. I just created a telenovela.
They're going to have this whole will you stop touching me thing all the yes. time.
Oh my
stop
gosh.
Touching that. Stop touching me. Stop touching this. Stop
I'm
touching,
not touching
your typewriter.
You. I'm not touching you. Exactly. Stop touching me. I'm not touching you.
Sherlock's going to casually mention that monograph he wrote about infectious diseases.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah, no, Monk is a delightful show. I love how they created a character out of nowhere, right?
And they really did. Like, they didn't have to stretch it. Like, they didn't have to stretch to get to the season length. Like,
yeah.
It's rewatchable. Like, it is, you can flip it on at any point and be delighted, but it's not for lack of growth. It's not for lack of interest. It's just because they created a world that they're willing to play in for however many million seasons.
And he never truly gets insufferable, you know?
No, I think that's the line that he walks really well.
Like, even Cumberbatch, you kind of feel like that version of Sherlock could be a bit much over 20 episodes.
Well, and he is a bit
episodes.
Much in, I mean, he is a bit much in the world, right?
Yeah.
And, like, everybody sort of feels like Monk has their I don't know if best interest at heart, but they're like, okay, we'll put up with this guy because he's not a total maniac. He's just mostly a maniac and annoying, but we can get right. We'll deal with it because he's right most of the time.
All right. Adrian Monk off the board. Shelley, who is your next mystery movie character?
So I don't feel constrained by centuries like some of you all do. It's just because of, what do I do a show about? Really old movies, okay? I can't help it. Although sometimes I come on here and I go off-brand on purpose to freak people out.
I was going to say, are you okay talking about Color? Because this is... You know, this is hurting my brain.
Well, I had one that wasn't in Color, and I took it off. And it's in the crazy round list. But I was just like, come on, that's a little too much. But I'm way back in time. I'm going to 1967 for Ironside, starring Raymond Burr as a wheelchair using detective in San Francisco. And there was a whole bunch of detective series that started around that time, including some I didn't pick, like Mannix, which is probably my favorite of that little set. But these sort of men of action shows where, you know, Mannix, like most of the opening, he's running around and his car is crashing. Raymond Burr is just sitting in a wheelchair, you know, being grumpy. But still, Ironside's, you know, kind of fun. And I will also say, I considered picking Columbo as well, but I had a look and he is barely compliant with my theme, so I decided against it.
Oh, wow.
I believe in rules, apparently.
Yeah, he enjoyed the role because after, 8 years of Perry Mason, now he just got to sit.
Good to sit there. Yeah.
And Don Galloway had to push him around. That was nice. All right, so Robert Ironside off the board. Nathan, we come back to you.
Well, I had a pick that that is really near and dear to my heart, but I think it's better suited for the wild and bananas round. So I'll save that for next time. Instead, I'm going to go with a pair of detectives who I think have a unique dynamic in television history, in that one of them is so good at his job that he is literally being physically and mentally destroyed by it. And the other is an absolute monster who is helping to solve mysteries for his own nefarious and enigmatic ends. And I'm talking about Will Graham and Hannibal Lecter. Wow. From the Brian Fuller series version of Hannibal. I think I'll leave you to your sweaty, fervid murder husband's fandom. I just really like the dynamic between Hugh Dancy and Mads Mikkelsen in the leading roles. And I just really think there's something fascinating about an absolute terrifying satanic monster working on the side of the angels without anyone knowing he's a monster for his own possibly unknowable reasons. And as long as the show sticks to that, I think it's at its strongest when it goes into, oh, look at how in love they are. How great Hannibal Lecter is. Let's all feel sorry for Hannibal, everybody. He only ate like 15 people. It kind of loses me. But when it's sticking to the tension and the procedural of how can this monster help me solve a murder without me losing my own mind? It's a great show.
And it's a beautiful show to look at.
Sometimes too much so.
A little horrifying, yeah. But
sometimes it gets so pretty that it forgets to tell a story. But you can safely drift out of that show around the beginning of the third season and come back for the episode where Lawrence Fishburne kicks Hannibal Lecter's ass all over Venice. And from there on, you're good. but I do like that, you know, at the end of one season, Hannibal Lecter, you know, absconds for Europe in the company of Gillian Anderson, which is about the only thing he does in that series that I would wholeheartedly encourage other people to emulate, if given the chance.
Yeah, I can go along with that. And it always struck me funny that this was Brian Fuller after doing Wonderfalls, the wonderfully twee and fun Wonderfalls and the wonderfully twee Pushing Daisies, and now let's go for the Baroque horror of Hannibal.
And he brought in the lead actress of Dead Like Me to play a dark and twisted version of her character with a psychological ailment that convinced her that she was actually dead.
Yeah. Yeah. It is one of the few shows where I would use the word Baroque because it is amazing.
The food styling in that show is another star of the series.
Yeah. Well, you know, making those human souffles look appetizing, I guess, is not a...
The lady fingers alone. Okay, so Will Graham and Hannibal Lecter off the board. Chris, what is your third pick?
All right, I'm going to bring it back to the sort of the guy who made the first screen adaptation of Hannibal Lecter. I'm going to pick James Sonny Crockett of the Metro-Dade Police Department and Miami Vice. This is a bit of recency bias. He says about a show that aired from 1984 to 1989. Look, I've been watching it this year. I have been glorying in the fact that, you know, in the later seasons of this, I would sort of sneak past my parents and like try to watch this when they wouldn't let me. And now I have the Blu-rays and, you know, there's nothing they can do about it. This show is almost purely abstract. There's not a lot of serialization. The heavy emphasis on pop songs was novel at the time, but they play these out in this entirety, which means in one of these 49 minute episodes, there's a good 12 or 13 minutes of where it's just establishing shots. We're just going to play out this whole song. There's no narrative happening. You know, so you're soaking in the Miami location photography, the clothes. This was a big influential fashion item for a few years there in the mid 80s. And this character, Don Johnson's Sonny Crockett, was the first anti-hero that I think I sort of started to recognize by that name as a kid, as a guy who sort of understood the futility of his job and, you know, was very irritable. Not super nice to his, always seemed to be yelling, God damn it. Yeah. Crockett was the way he always answered the phone. Crockett, you know, he was never happy. And I was like, man, you know, you drive this cool car, you live on a boat, you have a pet alligator. Elvis, the pet alligator. Elvis,
yeah.
Of course. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, I believe at the end of the show he quits and rides off into the sunset. I have not in my, you know, latter day middle age rewatch gotten to the late season storyline where he has amnesia and believes himself actually to be the drug dealer that he was playing as his cover. Looking forward to the kind of soap operatic turn that I vaguely remember that taking from the late 80s. But I have found this show very satisfying to revisit from its moment. Almost everyone involved, certainly Michael Mann. I think Michael Mann actually left the show to go make Manhunter, the first Hannibal Lecter movie, the adaptation of the novel Red Dragon. For anti-heroes, for cranky... anti-heroes who didn't wear socks, who drove cool cars, and had a dramatically different hairstyle from season to season. James Sonny Crockett is my pick.
Miami Vice defined my hometown for everyone in America. Nobody knew what Miami was, and now we know because Miami Vice exists. It's alligators for pets and drug dealers and... No socks. No one wears socks ever. We're allergic to socks.
It's Art Deco and Day Glow neon color.
Yes, absolutely.
And I just want to shout out the casting director of this show. I mean, it is astonishing when you go back and look like the actors who they got as guest stars on the way up for this almost every episode.
Sonny Crockett is off the board. So now my God, I could pick Columbo, but I'm not going to pick Columbo. But you know, Jessica Fletcher is already out there. So William Link and Richard Levinson are already represented, but I'm going to pick another one of their shows, the 1975 Ellery Queen, which is basically Murder, She Wrote. I mean, it is a mystery writer finding himself surrounded by actors from the silver age of film, and solving mysteries. And it has, you know, it has Peter S. Fisher and Robert Van Schoik and several of the writers who came along to Murder, She Wrote with them. But it's set in 1947 New York. It's set in the world of radio. And they follow the style of the original radio version of Ellery Queen, where right before the denouement, he turns to the camera and says, "Do you know who did it? You've seen everything I've seen. You should be able to figure it out." we'll see. And that was literally the third act break in every episode. I mean, that stood out to me as a child because that was cool. It was like, yeah, I'm going to challenge you. Right. And it follows him, is played by Jim Hutton, father of Timothy, and his father is played by David Wayne. And he's the commissioner of police of New York. So, you know, you've got a professional cop and you've got the amateur detective. And it's just fun. And it really nails that classic golden age 1940s style of mystery. But it was only on for one season in 1975 on NBC. But it's a delightful show. I got to catch up again with it on TV Land in the 90s. And then I have the DVD set because it's out on DVD. It's just fun.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, now, this is the crazy round. This is the round where there are no rules, right? These are, you know, it can be something that maybe you're the only person who may have seen this show, right? One season shows, short-lived shows, obscure shows, or Jim Rockford. He's still out there. That's crazy. So we come back to you, Katie. Who is your crazy pick?
Oh, so my crazy pick isn't that crazy because it's in keeping with the theme.
Okay.
Except for the fact that she's not real. I'm going to go with Velma from Scooby-Doo. Yes! Because how can we not pick Velma?
Nice.
She's been sitting there the whole time.
And she's the one who actually solves the cases.
Here's the thing. I wanted to fight you on like being allowed to pick the entire Scooby-Doo mystery gang. But then I was like, we have to then define what the core mystery gang is. And I don't want Scrappy-Doo.
Oh, God,
and I feel
no.
like you have to take him if you're going to fight for the other five. So I'm going to say...
Fair enough.
I'm going to leave the rest further for everyone else, but Velma, she's the one who's going to clearly carry and do 99% of the work in this team. I just want to acknowledge that straight out. So she's a two-dimensional character, but three-dimensional in our hearts. Because without her, we would never solve a mystery here at Katie's Mystery Solving Hut.
She needs tighter glasses. That's about the only...
Contacts, LASIK.
Well, you know,
or just bend
straps.
The ear thing.
Straps.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nothing would get done without Velma. No, they would be dead several times over without Velma. You think Daphne? No offense to Daphne, but you think Daphne is going to step up and solve a mystery? No, Daphne is interested in Fred. There's not a lot of brain power going on in that decision making process.
If it weren't for Velma. Daphne and Fred would be the murdered couple at the beginning of every right. teen slasher movie.
Yep.
They go off to alone together. Yep. Let's split up, guys. And next thing you know, it's just someone's head in a fridge. And then it's just Shaggy and Scooby, who are already high. So they're not going to solve anything.
Tom, what is your crazy pick?
I could go with the entire team from Psych, which was...
Nice.
Thinking about, I could reunite Mrs. Potts and Lumiere and have Lenny Briscoe.
Or Harry McGraw.
But we're going to go with Constable Odo from Deep Space Nine.
Hey, he was on my list.
Was he?
Yeah.
He's going to be a Jessica Fletcher's typewriter half the time. And the rest of the time in a bucket. And the rest of the time solving crimes. Space crimes.
Space crimes.
this.
I loved how weary and annoyed he was. He's just like, oh, crap, another mystery. Don't bother me with this. I have paperwork to do. And I loved that about him. He didn't want to be involved in any of this stuff. It was boring and awful for him. And he did it because it was his job.
The best Odo episode is the one where they end up back in time and it's Odo under the Cardassian occupation. And he's like this fascist lackey anyway. And you're like, ooh, this is a darkness to him that I didn't know was there.
Yeah. He was a shapeshifter on many levels. There's a pretty good Star Trek novel called I, Constable that is basically Odo in a film noir mystery. And the book cover has him in a trench coat and snap-brim hat. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun playing with those tropes.
Is he wearing a trench coat and a snap-brim hat, or is that just golden goop that has become...
That's a good question.
Does he wear clothes? Is he clothes? I don't know.
So, all right, Constable Odo, that is a good, crazy choice. Shelley, what is your crazy choice?
So this is crazy only in the sense that it doesn't follow my established theme, which I shall share with you now. The theme, and I have lots of bring out your deads on this one as well. The theme is basically a detective who, before he or she was on television as a detective, had a significant career in classic film. Okay, so we have Raymond Burr, we have William Conrad, and we have Rock Hudson. And as I say, I have a bunch more. But because he doesn't quite fit the rules and because the suspense of who and when it's going to get picked is so great, I'm going to choose Columbo.
Yes!
Yay!
Because Peter Falk did not... He was mostly a television actor, and he made a few movies in the late 50s. So my show, Lions, Towers, and Shields, is approximately 1930 to 1960 for films. I go a little forward of that. But Falk was mostly a TV actor, and the most notable film I ever saw him in of that era was this thing called Pocket Full of Miracles with Betty Davis. God, it was terrible. but Falk popped up in an awful lot of television in the early 60s before he was in Columbo. And I say I am not one of the Columbo stands out there. I admire the craft and sticking to a theme. If I was going to choose something that was Columbo adjacent, I would probably just pick Mrs. Columbo for the fun of it because I adore Kate Mulgrew. Columbo is my crazy round pick.
Yeah, I love Columbo. I love a good plot. I love the ones, I mean, Jason has talked about this for years. We've talked about it offline for years. We love when you set a format, mainly because then you can screw around with the format. And some of the best Columbos are the ones where instead of just, we see the guy planning the murder. And then, you know, like there's one called Last Salute to the Commodore, where Robert Vaughn, you know, you're like, oh, well, Robert Vaughn is the killer because he's the suave, elegant guest star. And you see the beginning, you see the whole planning of the murder, and then, whoop, Robert Vaughn gets killed. And now you have no idea who the killer is. And that 5 years into making Columbo's, people were like, what the hell was that? So, yeah, those are fun episodes. And, you know, even a lesser story, it's just fun because Peter Falk. So having picked Columbo, Nathan, what is your crazy choice?
Okay. Well, you know, when you're solving murders, it helps to have some firsthand experience, not necessarily in solving murders, but possibly in being dead or in being able to talk directly to the victims and ask, hey, who killed you? And that's why my bananas choice is Pushing Daisies with Ned the Pie Maker, Charlotte Chuck Charles, and Emerson Codd. This was another Brian Fuller joint, the diametric opposite of Hannibal. You can say it's twee, you can say it's cutesy, I acknowledge all of that, but this show is a horse needle of dopamine right to the pleasure center of my brain. just a sweet, funny, tremendously inventive and quietly macabre show about a guy who might as well be dead, his dead sort of girlfriend who is more alive than anyone else in the show, and a grouchy private investigator who is greedy and likes to knit his own gun holsters in his spare time, going around asking dead people who killed them and yet still somehow having to solve weird and entertaining mysteries because it turns out dead people are super chatty and can never get to the point.
And still amazing food styling.
Oh yeah. So many delicious pies. Oh. Don't watch that show hungry.
Emerson and Olive were on my list.
Nice.
That team, that detective team. I love them.
That's just a restaurant together I want to go to, Emerson and Olive.
So I call that show New French New Wave because it's got same kind of like stylistic sight gags and weird macabreness under the surface. And one of my favorite bits they ever did was Emerson and Olive were solving a mystery without Ned and Chuck. And they're both wearing raincoats. And they'd never comment on it, but on Emerson's raincoat is a bunch of cod, like just fish covering the raincoat. And on Olive's raincoat, there's just a bunch of olives. I remember spending the whole scene being like, where would you get such a raincoat? I don't even know what the mystery is anymore. Now I need to know the mystery of these raincoats.
The answer is from the depths of Brian Fuller's brain.
And I got to say, Pushing Daisies has maybe one of my all-time favorite sight gags ever, where a clown car has plunged into a lake and a clown is dead. And just in the background of the scene, there goes one gurney with a body and then another gurney with a body and another gurney. And it's a clown car of gurneys. It's hilarious, but you have to be paying attention.
I would have watched 1 million episodes of that show. I would still be watching that show if they were making it.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go back and mention that you referred to Hannibal as Baroque and Pushing Daisies as Twee, but I feel like that it's Baroque in its own way. Like that's a Baroque piece of Twee.
It is heavily influenced, if quietly influenced, by The Avengers.
Yes.
Not unlike The X-Files also. A lot of shows share DNA with The Avengers. But that cheerful surreality.
Yeah.
A world full of weird, eccentric experts who are all super into one thing to the point where they theme their whole lives around it.
All right. So Pushing Daisies. Chris, what is your crazy pick?
You know, I have a bananas pick, but I don't feel good about it. Since I have to choose a detective.
Which means you're totally in the incomparable zone.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Well, let's go to a show that did not... end before it should have. I'm going to choose as my bananas pick detective Ron McLardy as Detective Ralph Ruskin. And if neither of those names are familiar to you, and it sounds like I'm just reading them off a cast list, that's because the names of the characters don't lodge in your mind the way the names of the songs do in Cop Rock. Stephen Boschko's 11-episode, probably the only film or the only television show that you can look up in on Wikipedia, and under genre it says police procedural, comma, musical. I saw the pilot for this when it aired in 1990, and I remember in its entire, like, not just the chorus, but all the verses of a song called "He's Guilty." Now, I don't know if this if this was composed by Randy Newman as the theme was. I do see some other composers credited here, so I have no way of knowing whether Newman, whether or not he composed that song that lodged in my brain for 30 years. I think I watched a second episode of this.
I mean, someone did.
Sure. Yeah. 11 episodes. I mean, some of the titles are enjoyable. There's one called The Three Corpse Meal. There's an episode called The Cocaine Mutiny. Copophiliac. Yeah. So,
The Cocaine Mutiny sounds like something that happened in that show's writer's room.
I just love the thought of Stephen Boschko, you know, riding off of Hill Street Blues at L.A. Law and going, you know what?
Yeah, what I can do anything, that? And I'm going to prove it to you.
And
yeah.
I think they spent just a mountain of money to do it as well.
Oh, it was. It was like the most expensive show on TV at the time, I think. Yeah, I mean, I think the pilot is on YouTube in its entirety. I don't know how many other episodes are, but...
Where I like what does Boshko do after this? Does it well NYPD Blue is still after this.
And, yeah, and
with,
NYPD
with
Blue
some of the
after,
cast
yeah.
from Cop Rock. So I guess he did fine.
Yeah, no, there was that. There was Hooperman. There was Murder One, which could have been better, but wasn't terrible.
Don't remember Murder One having any memorable songs.
No, no.
You know, you can't have everything.
Right? So, oh man. So many things I could pick for a crazy pick. But for my crazy round, for my crazy pick, it's not that crazy. It's Philip Marlowe, played by Powers Booth for HBO. Oh, wow. And I forget who in Britain. It was a co-production. It's really good. Boy, does it capture that classic 30s, 40s film noir styling. And Powers Booth might be the best Philip Marlowe I've ever seen.
Wow.
I can see it. Yeah. I have not seen that show, but I can imagine him as a Philip Marlowe.
Yeah, same.
They adapted them. They adapted several Raymond Chandler short stories that are not Philip Marlowe stories and just turned them into Philip Marlowe. But it's fascinating. Is it a perfect adaptation? No, it's good enough, but he is he tears up the screen as Philip Marlowe. I wish there had been more of those. I think there are only 12, but many of them are on YouTube. I know it's been on DVD. It may not be impossible to find, but it's going to be hard to find. But that's my way of cheating and picking a whole bunch of things in the crazy round, which is crazy.
Nicely done.
And we still didn't pick Jim Rockford. so we should come back around and do the quick bring out your dead round, which is just everyone who's left. We don't have to do any great talking about them. Just, you know, hey, we acknowledge this existed and liked it. What the hell? So, Katie, who do you have left?
Oh my gosh. So many people. So my theme that I was going for was the James Bond movie we'll never get to see. So my next cast member would have been Inspector Gadget, obviously.
Oh,
is
wow.
Q. Like gotta hit that real hard.
Okay.
I wanna shout out to Joan Watson on Elementary, Lucy Liu's interpretation of John Watson.
Yeah.
I adore what she did with that character. The whole show in general was awesome. And then Mulder and Scully, guys, we didn't bring Mulder and Scully into this at all.
Scully was on my list, not Mulder. He's not a detective and he's barely an FBI agent, but specifically Dana Scully.
I like to think of it as Dana Scully detective with her sidekick,
right. Scrappy,
who is a fox named Mulder.
It's Scrappy, it's Scrappy.
Detective, comma, physician.
Scrappy
it's
Mulder.
Like being police procedural, comma, musical. Mm-hmm.
It would be a shame not to mention him, Virgil Tibbs from In the Heat of the Night was also hanging out on my list.
Nice. Okay. Who do you have left, Tom?
I didn't expect to have such riches at the top, so my theme really went to hell. A theme that I had in mind was, you know, go all sci-fi detectives, so Detective Miller from The Expanse. What's his face from Babylon 5, Garibaldi, Detective Inspector 10th Doctor from Broadchurch. and I did do that. I wanted to go with Everyone Give It Up for Public Broadcasting's favorite mystery solving Belgian, Hercule Poirot.
Yeah.
Who else was away? Gloria Bergel, Carrie Coon's character in Fargo, that season of Fargo. And very bad detectives who should feel bad would be any non-Dexter member of Dexter.
Wow. Okay, Shelley, who do you have left?
So back to my theme of people who had classic film careers who went on to be detectives. And we're going to start with a trio of Quinn Martin productions. Buddy Ebsen is Barnaby Jones.
Who had a great flute theme, speaking yes. of counterpoint. Oh my wow. God, the counterpoint.
Streets of San Francisco with Carl Malden.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
The Untouchables with Robert Stack. My non-Quinn Martin, Adam 12 with Martin Milner, who barely squeaks in as somebody who was in classic films. We did Sweet Smell of Success not long ago. Dragnet with Jack Webb and Harry Morgan. And Jake and the Fat Man, back to William Conrad, who was in that. And then last but not least, I'm going to count Perry Mason, not only for Raymond Burr, but for William Tallman and William Hopper, who both were kicking around in the 50s. And they'd pop up in film noirs as cops or criminals and the like. So, and yes, technically, Jim Rockford from the Rockford Files would qualify, as would there was a 1959 Philip Marlowe that I've never seen with Philip Carey, who had a married to Joan Crawford at one point, which was probably what he was most famous for. And then I guess I'll stand pat with it. I could talk about Richard Diamond with Mary Tyler Moore before she was Laura Petrie, you know, but
we only got to see her legs.
That's true, but I was still going to count her. She was in the show.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And David Janssen.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes back to William Conrad and Quinn Martin.
It does.
Nathan, who do you have left?
Well, I've got the Scooby-Doo Gang Mystery Incorporated, specifically from the show Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated, which is the first time Scooby-Doo, for me at least, has ever been actually compelling and an interesting mystery. It's an amazing show. If you haven't seen it, it takes everything you know about Scooby-Doo and then just adds this extra layer of depth to it, along with a lot of amazing cameos and references and a grand unified theory of the Hanna-Barbera universe.
With Harlan Ellison playing himself.
Yes. And,
okay,
and
what the hell?
Wow.
And Jeffrey Combs playing a H.P. Lovecraft analog, and Michael J. Yeah. Anderson reprising his role from Twin Peaks, and an off-screen cameo by Pinhead and the Cenobites. I mean, this show is bananas, you guys. And
it really is.
Wow.
At some point, Scooby-Doo may or may not fight Cthulhu. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm going to go with of course, John Steed and Emma Peel. They solved a lot of mysteries, and they did so very stylishly. I will pick Matthew Reese's recent reincarnation of Perry Mason, because I love a private detective who's a real POS, and his drunken, you know, disheveled mess of a human being is incredibly entertaining to watch as he goes from bad private investigator to bad lawyer. Eliza Scarlett from the PBS show Miss Scarlett and the Duke is very entertaining. It is about a tiny and very determined lady who solves mysteries with the help of a large, hulking, very Scottish and very handsome cop who looks like a Henry Cavill made out of Chris Hemsworth's. And finally, one last plug for the CW version of Nancy Drew with Kennedy McMahon in the title role. It combines the warmth and offbeat humor of the OC with the bonkers supernatural frights of the Conjuring movies, and it absolutely fearlessly goes for that premise in a way that makes it incredibly entertaining.
It shouldn't work, but it does. All right. And Chris, who do you have left?
Boy, I feel well and truly outclassed. I think I used all my chits on Cop Rock. I will, I'm going to return to Agent Carter, the series, and shout out Shea Whigham, because I think he was Perry Mason, the most recent, the Matthew Reeves Perry Mason. He was like his investigator, right? Wasn't he?
Yep.
Yeah, he was doing some dirty work, some digging up witnesses and for Perry. He was pretty great. I did recuse myself from naming Steed and Mrs. Peel because I do have framed photographs of them in my living room. that bowler. Since I was never tempted other than on Halloween to wear a bowler, and I have really felt the draw towards cowboy hats in recent years, and we have Established that federal law enforcers are admissible. I will name Raylan Givens of Justified.
Nice.
Soon to return. I always thought of the show as Walker Texas Ranger for smart people. you know, Elmore Leonard, I don't think was involved in it initially, but like he was, you know, thought it was a successful enough adaptation and expansion of his short story that he asked to come on as a writer later on. The dialogue is great. The performances is great.
Ed wrote a late novel called Raylan, I think.
Right. Yeah.
That was taking this version of the character instead of the one that he had started.
And apparently they had a lot of, he and Timothy Oliphant, a lot of talk about the hat, like whether it was something that Raylan needed to have. I can't remember who thought it was like, you know, give the hat a rest and who thought, no, the hat is essential. But it's a hat that confers power. And this is a guy who walks into a lot of stupid situations, no matter how tough. At least once per episode, I'm like, you would want to bring some backup with you for and you're going to outquip the person who you're here to quip with. But I don't know. I think that's I can still buy into the sort of power fantasy element of this because I just wish I was that erudite and quippy. And he wears the hat well, like I said. So Deputy U.S. Marshal Raylan Givens.
That is a good call, yeah. It's such a good show. Such a good show. My Bring Out Your Dead round is surprisingly long. No, it's not surprising at all. Spencer from Spencer for Hire, who I liked in the books before the show even was a thing.
Yeah, the Mark Wahlberg Spencer remains on the board, I think.
It's going to remain there for a while with New Magnum. Oh my God, that movie is painful. Of course, Jim Rockford, because Jim Rockford, you don't get Magnum without Jim Rockford. You probably don't get Simon and Simon without them. There was a show that followed Murder, She Wrote for a couple of years called Crazy Like a Fox, with Jack Warden and John Rubenstein as a father and son. It's basically The Odd Couple as detectives, but father and son. I did have David Suchet as Poirot, Scooby-Doo, Dark Winds, Lupin, which technically isn't a detective, but there is some mystery solving. And don't watch the dubbed version because it's a French show on Netflix. Watch it with subtitles because the dubbed version just sounds wrong. Nobody sounds like what they look like. It's weird. It's just weird, man.
But do watch the 15 minutes of dubbing credits at the end of every Netflix series.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
You know, those people deserve their recognition.
There is a show coming soon to PBS. I think it's still coming soon. That I was lucky enough to get a look at, called The Magpie Murders. No, it's not The. That's part of the plot. It's just Magpie Murders, based on the book by Anthony Horowitz. It's a really good adaptation. I didn't quite get through the book. The adaptation is fantastic. It's just a lot of fun. And this is kind of forgotten a little bit, but they did like in the 70s, they did the Lord Peter Wimsey novels with Ian Carmichael, and they're okay. They're very, he's much more Bertie Wooster-y than he should be. But in the late 80s, they did the Wimsey novels that also have Harriet Vane, and they had Edward Petherbridge as Lord Peter Wimsey and Harriet Walter as Harriet Vane. And those are right. Those get the books. They're so good. They're about intelligent people doing intelligent things and saying intelligent things. And none of them are Bertie Wooster. So that's a lot of fun. And then a pick that, if John Hodgman is listening, he'll be very happy that I mentioned Foyle's War, which is set in World War II and after. And it is a very good mystery series. And of course, Columbo. But Columbo got picked. Thank God. So all that remains for me to do is to thank each of you for joining us. Katie Siegel, thank you for coming and being part of this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. And just, you know, go and listen to Where or When on the Incomparable Network, because it's a fun show.
It's got mystery, it's got romance, and it's got time travel. Like, what else do you need? Honestly.
I mean, that's like our wheelhouse. And Tom McGrath, thank you for coming back to the Incomparable.
It's been a pleasure, even though I was dead the whole time.
Oh my God, it's a twist. And Shelley Brisbane, of course, you have the keys to the joint.
Well, I have some keys. I have the keys to the black and white portion of the Incomparable, apparently. Thanks for having me and for tolerating the fact that the newest program I recommended was from the very early 80s. So, like, on brand is how I live my life.
I almost picked Martin Kane Private Eye from 1951. Just because.
Jeez.
And Nathan Alderman, welcome and thank you.
I'd just like to thank you all for helping me establish an airtight alibi.
And Chris Klimek, thank you for coming. You fit right into the Incomparable.
Oh, it's so much fun to do this with you all. Thank you.
And I've been your not Jason Snell, David J. Lohr, thanking you for listening, and we'll be back with something else next week.